Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way.
And Abundantly Well, Seven Medicines, The Wise Woman Way, the newest book in the Wise Woman Herbal series.
So exciting.
In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses.
TheWiseWomanSchool.com. Join us there for colorful, instructive, easy video courses, including Easy Herbal Medicine with Susan Weed, Happy Knees, a cancer diagnosis, adaptogens for long life, and Abundantly Well companion course, wisewomanschool.com.
You can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you and welcome, Susan.
Susan, are you with us? All right. Hello, everyone. I'm seeing Susan with our hand raised in the queue. Let's try again to get her mic open. Susan, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. It wasn't letting me open your mic at first. Here we
are.
Correct.
Hurrah! Yay! Welcome, Sarah Ellen.
Oh, thank you, Susan. How are you this evening?
Yes. You are in Florida tonight?
Yes, new home sweet home in Florida. I am here.
Oh, my gosh. Amazing, amazing. Well,
mm-hmm.
I have a fabulous day. The correct T-shirts arrived. And
oh,
I took them. I took them to Sunshine Silk Screen to have the Red Clover Goddess silk screened on them. And fingers crossed, I will be at the first Zoom meeting of the Red Clover Conference wearing one.
Oh, my goodness. I can't wait to see her on the shirt. So beautiful.
That is my goal, that she will be unveiled. If not on the first day, I guarantee that one of the days of the conference I will be wearing the shirt, and they will then be available. They were pretty cagey at the Zook screening place, you know. I said, well, now that we've had this long delay, I said, initially I told you that there wasn't any rush, and so now there's no rush. Tomorrow, right? You'll give them to me when I get here tomorrow? And she said, you can come tomorrow, but they won't be ready. So I kind of softly pushed, you know, several times. I said, the conference starts on May 1st, right? I'm going to be wearing a shirt for the conference, right? They would just smile at me. So no guarantees have been offered, and thus I can't guarantee either anything except it will be done.
There we go. Bless it.
We will have Red Clover T-shirts, and they are worth waiting for. And if we don't sell out immediately online, I will take them with me to the Midwest Women's Herbal Conference the end of May.
I'm looking forward to seeing you there. It's going to be so nice.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. All right. So what else is going on up there in the Catskills? Springtime? Have you started
Everything, right? The scented daffodils are blooming, and we are swooning from all of the daffodils. The first year, I bought a scented collection and planted that, and then in years afterwards, I've just bought, you know, like whatever 100 you want to give me. So right now in a vase by my bed, there is a regular yellow daffodil with a yellow throat and yellow petals, and a white daffodil with white throat and white petals, and another white one with the petals very big and the throat very tiny, and another one with a tiny throat, but the throat is very yellow. And here's one where the throat is big and it's cut, so it's almost like a butterfly. And there's white petals and a yellow throat, but it's all opened up, so it looks like a star within a star. And then this one, the cup is actually doubled, so it's like a really big star. Oh, here, this one has white petals. It just goes on and on, and like a coral throat. Just amazing, huh?
Wow, that is a lot of daffodils, and all there by your bed.
And I didn't even tell you all of them. And there's another whole bunch of different ones in the bathroom.
Oh, how happy. So happy.
Oh, how fun. And the amaryllis, the late-blooming amaryllis, have chosen right now to do their second blooming. Right, the first bloom comes up, and it can be from 1 to 3 stalks, and then there's a wait, and then the second bloom comes up. And the first bloom usually has 4 flowers. And the second, this one looks like it's going to have 2 big flowers and maybe a 3rd flower.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah, I'm starting seeds.
Oh, what kind? What are you starting?
I save all the plastic things that come into my life that can hold soil.
Mm.
When I had norovirus, just about the only things that I could drink were infusion and grape juice, real grape juice without anything in it. And unfortunately, it comes in plastic containers, but I saved all those plastic containers. We poked holes in the bottom of them and filled them up with soil, and they're ready to start seeds.
Super
right?
useful.
And you can even use, I don't, but you can use the top. It's like a little mini greenhouse, right?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Right?
Mm-hmm. To keep it moist mm-hmm. and a little warm. Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So clever.
So the view out my window that I see first thing in the morning is my peach tree covered in beautiful pink blossoms, although not every single one of them has a honeybee in it now. It's a little back from the total boing of its bloom. And beyond that, a wild cherry, a big, tall wild cherry. All of the wild cherries are just covered in flowers this year. It was such a mild winter. Mm. And beyond that, a big hedge of forsythia.
Oh, I love the forsythia. Love them.
Does its range extend down into Florida where you are?
The forsythia?
Uh-huh.
I am not sure. I feel like I'm in a new land, even though this is my home state. I have so much to learn about the plants. Been really happily surprised that there are quite a few that do grow here. There's a few varieties of Hypericum that grow here.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm, and elderberry. So that's happy. And, yes, I have a lot to learn.
That was exactly how I felt the first time I taught in Florida. I thought, oh, my gosh, I know so little about what's here. And I hired a botanist to take me out for a day and introduce me.
Oh, I love that. I've been thinking of, like, looking for somebody to, you know, have over and introduce me to my space.
Mm-hmm. There's also a big botanical park. Oh, I am not getting her name right now. There was a woman who's very famous in botany in Florida, in southern Florida, and especially with medicinal plants. And she was like, one of her books, oh, her name is just at the back of my mind. She's like up to her waist in some swamp somewhere looking at plants. Gorgeous picture.
Oh,
and so there's a big botanical garden in Miami named after her with everything labeled.
Ooh, I'll have to look into that. Those are some good hints. I may be able to figure that out and find out who she is.
Yeah, yeah. It's a super, super famous botanical garden. If for some reason I'm drawing a blank on it, but perhaps by the end of the evening it will have meandered its way into my speech area. It's lurking back there in the shadows. That's all right. Just lurk all you want. It's fine.
Okay.
So several notable things about this person who took me out on a walk. He had only one leg. He didn't have a prosthesis. He just had one leg and crutches and a pinned trouser leg. And so we're out. And for those of you who haven't been out in the wilds in Florida, it is very wild. It is very much more wild than the forests of the Northeast. Walking around in the forests of the Northeast, it's like you're walking on manicured paths because of the deer, right? Right? You just follow the deer trails and you don't even have to duck because they've eaten everything. But when you're out in Florida, boy, you are in the thick of it. It's like, you know, you're in the subtropics there, and it's starting to get pretty tropical with plants growing on plants and crowding out plants. You know, not quite machete in your hand to get in there yet, but getting there. So he teased me all day long because we would come to fallen logs. He would put his crutches on one side, loop his body over the top, and I would be scrambling over with my two legs.
Oh, my. With all the, I'm imagining, right, there's so many plants and vines, so those crutches would come in handy to push those out of the way. Clear,
exactly, exactly. He said, you're so handicapped. I loved that turn that he put on it. And at the end of the day, he said to me, you know, you've seen more orchids today than most people will ever see in their entire lifetime.
Ooh.
Too bad none of them were in bloom.
Oh. Wow. Wow.
But I learned to recognize orchids when they're not in bloom.
Oh, wow.
Because they were indeed one of the most common plants that we were seeing. So that when I was in Costa Rica, in fact, I think that one of the things that really, like, socially persuaded the people to invite us into their delicious community was that I noted to one of the grandfathers an orchid that was growing on a tree that wasn't in bloom. Mm. Right, so it's like, hey, kind of like my bona fides, right? Like, okay, I'm real people. Check it out.
Yes.
We have a really wonderful guest this evening, Anna Dea Judas. And Anna Dea is a globally recognized teacher and the author of several best-selling books on chakras, psychology, yoga, social change, and women's leadership. And matter of fact, she has been translated into 28 languages. Her latest book is Goddess, Blessed Reunions with the Feminine Face of the Divine. And she will be here at 9 o'clock East Coast time to tell us what she's doing, about her new book, and about Goddess, the Divine Face You See in the Mirror. So come on back to hear her or stick with us until then. So what else do you want to tell us about being in your new home in Florida? Are the goats settled? Are all the animals happy?
Well, they are. They're getting settled, and I think they are going to be happy, but right now they're a little upset with us because we have not, they don't have a whole lot of space yet. So we're putting up more of their area and fences, and I've got to learn a little bit more about some of these plants to make sure things aren't in their space that shouldn't be in their space. Happy.
Yes. One of the first things I do when I'm in a very strange area is I buy a book on poisonous plants.
Mm-hmm.
And I memorize it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I don't have to worry about the rest of it.
Get a good book for goats, because
very good books about poisonous plants of Florida.
Okay. Because online, the information is so varied, and some of it I know just isn't true. It's too broad.
Well, I was going to say they will also generally verge toward hysteria. Like nettle is in various poison plant books.
Yes, I bet.
So there's poison, and then there's poison, and most people think poison kills you dead. But most plant poisons don't kill you dead. They accumulate. There's a few that could kill you dead, for sure. Right? Digitalis, mm-hmm. foxglove, lily of the valley, convolvulus. Those are cardiac glycosides that stop your heart. That does kill you. It's true. But poison hemlock, again, which paralyzes the muscles of breathing, there are plants that can kill you like that. But most plant poisons are like the poison in coffee.
Right.
It's a matter of dose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
mm-hmm.
a matter even of the frequency of the dose. So being a little green behind the ears, which is a good thing, you'll be able to tell the fact from the fiction in the Poison Plants book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very excited. I feel like that's a big part of us being back here, is the plants are really like, okay, you finally noticed us up in the Midwest because we were so showy and beautiful. And like you said, easy to get to and watch change throughout the season. And now I'm back home in Florida, and it's like a whole new scene to learn. So I'm ready. I'm so curious, super curious to find out lots of new things in the books and beyond. I'll tell you one thing I learned already, and that is, do you remember when we talked about catnip? When I made the tallow, I made catnip tallow, and we were like, I wonder what that'll be good for, and I said it was so stinky, and you mentioned insects. Oh, goodness. I am already just, I can hardly go outside without it, because it keeps the mosquitoes away for hours. Hours. Because it melds with me and my skin and whatever scent I'm putting off. So I, unlike the sprays, it stays for hours. Super cool.
Wow. Wow.
Yes. Phenomenal. Even my husband, I said, do you want some? And he slathered it on, and same thing. You're invisible. It's so cool.
So tell everyone really specifically how you made this so that they can replicate it.
Okay.
Please.
So I did not really weigh or measure anything. I just got a jar, and I filled it to the top with fresh catnip, flowering tops. What time of the year was it? I don't have the jar in front of me, so I cannot exactly say, but it was probably early summer, midsummer.
But it was flowering.
I don't really... They were flowering, yes.
Flowering,
and yep. And then I warmed some tallow, and I, in addition to the tallow, I didn't measure ratios, but if I had to guess, I would say it was probably maybe a tenth or a fifth olive oil, and the rest was tallow, grass-fed beef tallow. And then I poured that over the jar. I then put a loose lid on it. I put the jar in a brown paper bag, and then I put it outside in the sun in a black lidded tin just to keep it warm but not like too hot. But I did that.
So it was in a jar, in a bag, in a tin?
Yes. Yeah. Like it was in a closed grill that we weren't using. So it was a black closed grill in a paper bag.
Okay, got it. Right, got it. An unused grill. Right, just open the hood, stick it in there in its bag, and close the lid.
Right, yep, exactly, with the intention that it would stay warm and the tallow wouldn't harden. And then maybe that would help also do some of the extraction from, but it is beautiful. It turns really luscious green, and it smells just like catnip. So... It is amazing. It's just, like, amazing. I have never, like, been so invisible to mosquitoes by just the simple application of something. And catnip is so easy. If anyone that is around it, you know, it really just loves to grow. And you can keep cutting it, and the tops will keep flowering and flowering and flowering. So it was easy to make a lot of it.
Flowering and flowering. And you know what else? It's a groundhog repellent and a pretty good deer repellent, too.
Hmm, nice.
Right? I had a lot of really pretty pink-flowered mallows growing in my herb crescent, and the woodchucks kept eating them. So how do I know they had pink flowers? Because one of them flowered, and it was one that had grown up in the middle of a catnip patch.
Oh, I love it.
And I said, oh, really? And so then, because as you say, it flowers so much, and then it looks kind of like rank because it's got all these like dead flower stalks on it, and it's not great for the plant either. So I do cut them back, and then I use those as mulch to keep deer away from things.
Oh, that's clever. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
A great idea. Oh, my. Hooray, catnip.
There's catnip, our protector. Yay. You would probably read in a book, hang it by your door to protect against witches.
Which is funny because cats always hang out with witches.
Isn't it though? Well, nowadays, instead of witch, we would say bacteria. The witch spoiled my milk. Bacteria spoiled my milk. The witch made me sick. The bacteria made you sick. So I said one of the reasons as a witch, I love bacteria. Oh, boy, I'm a different scapegoat. I'm so glad.
There's so much better. Okay,
so anything else that you want to share with us, or shall we answer questions?
Well, I'm sure I'll have lots to share in the coming months as I learn lots and lots, but I think that's good for me tonight. Thanks for asking.
Okay.
I'm ready for questions. If you're ready for questions, you've got a hand.
Julia Morton.
Ah, there she is. Thank you.
Julia Morton, expert on Florida's poisonous plants.
Thank you.
T-T-T-T-T, 1912 to 1996. Go, girl.
Wow.
All right.
Thanks. I'll check out some of her stuff. Excellent. Yeah. Thank you, Susan.
You're welcome. So, questions?
All right, yes. I already see one hand that's up in the queue. I'll remind everyone listening, if you have a question and would like to speak live with Susan this evening, all you need to do is press 1. That will get your hand raised in the queue, and when it is your turn, I will announce your area code, open your line for you to ask your question. We will go to our hand that is raised from the 907 area code. In the 907, you are live with Susan.
Hello, Susan. This is Kai from Alaska.
Hi.
How are you? How are you?
I am really enjoying this season of beauty. How about you?
Getting better, Susan, getting better.
Okay.
I have a question. It has to do with mold. And I heard you speak about it, and I think there's a scam going around. The woman that I told you that I went to, and then I was kicked, she discharged me because I didn't follow her protocol, blah, 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 blah. I've started meeting people that went to her, and I'm talking like 10 people, all treated for mold. She wanted to treat me for mold. I backed off from that because I just didn't buy it. And then they are telling me that they put them on fungicides for months and months. I don't know. It just doesn't sound right to me. I think
you are very wise. You know, one of my university professors said to us, everyone has their hobby horse. And if you want to understand the person, you need to see what their hobby horse is. What is my hobby horse? My hobby horse is drink nourishing herbal infusions.
Well, that's a good hobby horse.
My hobby horse is herbal medicine is people's medicine, right? Her hobby horse is mold. So she is going to see everyone as having a hard time with mold, and her mold protocol as being something that will help. And the fact of the matter is that most of the symptoms for whatever the disease of the decade is are pretty vague.
Mm-hmm.
Foggy brain, headache, digestive upset, sleep disturbance, feeling sad. Yeah. Are you alive?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. She was trying to tell me I had headaches. I never have headaches.
Right.
She wanted a scan of my brain. I never have headaches. I think she's a danger, honestly, because here's another thing that she does. A friend of mine told me. You were talking about, was it you that mentioned ivermectin? Anyway, she was giving people ivermectin, and a friend of mine sends me a text, and she said, oh, I was recommended to take this. Now, this is a paste, and I remember when you give a horse the paste, you had to be like kind of, you just didn't slop around with that stuff. So she's taking a dab of the paste for prevention of cancer. I mean, this is scary. I mean, that paste is for a 1,200-pound animal. How do you know what dose you're getting? I mean, I don't know. I'm not a pharmacist.
There is a way to prevent cancer and to prevent old age. Die young.
There you go. Unbelievable. It's just unbelievable to me.
Yeah. So you don't want to die young. You are embracing life in all of its, who knows what comes next. I was reading this book, this novel. I was really into it. And it was like, I was on like page 430, just 450-page book, and I thought, how is she possibly going to end this book? She couldn't end it. She's only got like 20 more pages. We're so involved in all of these characters, and they're like all over the world. And then, bam, something big happens, and everything shifts. And I thought, yes, of course. Isn't that how it is?
That's what happens. That's literally what happened to me. Yep. That's literally what happened to me. Like I said, I went to her. She put me on some kind of thyroid medication, and I was in the ER 10 times. And Susan, it was so horrific. I filed a complaint with the state. I filed it. I just had to do it for myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have to stand up for our bodies.
We have to stand up for our autonomy in medicine. Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I know you, like I said, I heard you, like, I don't know, a couple years ago speak about the mold. And I was like, I have to hear what she said about it because I don't think it was positive. But, yeah, you're exactly right. It's her hobby. course.
I try to be on very good terms with yeast and mold and bacteria and all kinds of microorganisms because they are my microbiome in my gut. They are my microbiome on my skin. They are in every breath that I take in.
Mm-hmm.
And if I position myself in a place of fear and constriction about and against any of the microorganisms, including viruses, that I inhabit this planet with, then I can't really be healthy.
Exactly. Exactly. That's like with the hand sanitizers. That's like, oh, you have dirt under your fingernails. Oh, if you scratch your face, you're going to get, you know, whatever. I remember swimming.
I told you that at the wound care clinic, when they told me that there were soil bacteria in my wound, I laughed until I was literally crying. I said, soil bacteria, well, let's just leave it there, I said, because the next time I drop my pants and pee in the woods, I'm going to get more soil bacteria in the woods.
Exactly. That's the best place to pee, too.
Oh, my gosh. When you're on goat watch.
Well, thank you, Susan, so much. Again.
You are welcome. Green blessings and good night.
Good night. Green blessings.
All right. And it looks like we have five hands that have signaled they have a question by pressing 1. We will go to our next caller dialed in from the 603 area code. From the 603, you are live with Susan.
Oh, my gosh, you caught me with a mouthful. I was eating my supper. I'm so happy.
Okay, well, I guess you have to tell us what you're eating.
I just finished. Right now, I'm taking my last bite. A lamb chop salad with olive oil and yogurt, Greek yogurt on it. And what else did I have? I had a soup with my first fiddleheads of the season in my soup.
Woo-hoo!
It was so, yay, spring.
Yay, spring.
So good. Are yours up yet, up your way, Susan?
They are, yes. We were walking in the woods this weekend. I did my usual first workshops of the year. I often change around the workshops I do during the year, but I almost always start and finish with the same workshops every year. And in the spring, the first workshops are spring tonics and spring ephemerals. So in spring tonics, we were talking about all the cresses and mustard, Sobrassicaceae, which so loves to germinate in cold soils and is out there in almost everywhere, flowering and just in such abundance, the garlic mustard and the rock cresses and so many different kinds out there and how important they are. And then all of the alliums, we went out and picked wild leeks, ramps.
Yes, my ramps are up too.
Yeah. And wild chives and made fun things from them. And then the ephemerals, of course, are the plants that come up and bloom just before the trees leaf out. I think we have, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 days before you're not going to be able to see the sky. It's like the leaves are just like trembling on the edge of bursting out.
Oh, my.
I live in such a forested area that when there's leaf cover, there's leaf cover. Like we're taking a look around, going, goodbye mountains, goodbye views. Okay, here comes leaf views. Here comes living in green tunnels views.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Yeah. I should probably get to my questions. I don't know how many callers you have, but it was delightful.
Please,
sharing with you.
Bring me your questions.
Okay, Susan, thank you. Okay. This is two serious things. The first one, I could not get through last week. I was so frustrated.
Nobody could. I couldn't either.
What happened?
Sarah Ellen couldn't either.
I would connect.
Maybe it was an earthquake. Maybe it was a reaction to the eclipse. Maybe it was human error. Maybe it was poltergeist. Goodness only.
Well,
as they say, it's the unchangeable past now. So let's go on and be in the present.
Okay. So the very serious thing I have to ask you. Erectile dysfunction for the
man or woman?
For my husband, and dry vagina for me because we haven't had intercourse in years because he could never get it up. So he finally has decided he wants to take something for ED. And he said, well, there are prescriptions out there. And I says, I don't know if those are safe. Let me call Susan. So he was here last week, and we were both going to call you together, but he's not here this week. But anyway, I'm sure I can go ahead. So your suggestions, please.
Well, I would like to ask you a few questions.
Sure.
And you don't have to answer them if they feel intrusive or you don't want to share the information with
us.
You specifically said that you haven't had intercourse in a long period of time. Have you had sex during that time?
No.
Okay. So I would like to say that the equation sex equals intercourse is not an equation that leads to the most enjoyment.
Okay.
So before he starts taking a drug to make his body be young again, I urge both of you to start having sex again.
Okay.
So, what does sex start with? Sex starts with desire.
Yeah, I have the desire. He kind of
so
doesn't.
So you desire to touch him.
Yep.
And you also desire for him to desire you.
Yes.
And a pill that makes his erectile dysfunction functional isn't necessarily going to make him desirous. So there are many herbs, however, that apparently do increase men's desire.
Okay.
And I list them in down there.
Oh, I have that book somewhere. I got to dig it out again.
Let's see. Down there.
It's one of them saffron.
Well, testicular diseases, no, we don't want, here we go. Potency wood, we must be in the right place. Page 296, erectile dysfunction. And we have ginseng, of course. Help erectile dysfunction. Expect results in 2 to 3 months. Drink at least 1 quart each week of oat straw, red clover, and Shisandra. Is he currently drinking nourishing herbal infusions?
Yes.
Goody. So he's drinking red clover when you can get it. He's drinking oat straw. He can add Shisandra. Do pelvic floor exercises daily. Take ginseng. Tonify with an herb on the next page. All right. Next page. Ginkgo, yohimbe, guarana, damiana.
Wow. Are these for male and female
and
or just for female? Are these for just female?
Are all suggested. That's nice.
Are these just for the female or for both? Male and female.
These are for, I'm in the section on penis, who usually has one of those.
Oh, you're reading from the section on penis. Okay.
Correct.
So he has had some of those because of, I've given them to him, but not Shisandra, not Yohimbe or Guarana, but those others he have had. And how much of those, ginkgo, yohimbe, guarana, hartshorn, how much of those do you recommend in that book?
Ginkgo is especially effective. Well, this is erectile dysfunction. Let's see.
Would all of these be in tea?
There's anything about sexually transmitted. No, this is the best place to be, Susan. Definitely the best place to be. Ginkgo is especially effective when there's physical things that are restricting blood flow. And about 78% of men in trials using a fairly large dose of ginkgo daily for at least 6 weeks regained the ability to have regular erections.
Wow.
Potency wood stimulates arousal and erection in men who are tired, run down, and weak. About 70% of those taking tea or tincture, and that's a half a teaspoon of tincture twice a day, report intensification of libido and improvement in hardness.
Oh.
Yohimbe bark improves blood flow and increases smooth muscle relaxation. It has no effect on testosterone. It acts to increase norepinephrine, which is essential for erections and which decreases with age. You can also get more of that by eating beets. Yohimbe hydrochloride is the only FDA-approved anti-impotence herbal drug.
Hydrochloride?
Yohimbe hydrochloride is the only FDA-approved anti-impotence herbal drug. Its effects on men and women include increased stamina, heightened sensation, and greater desire. Consistent use of yohimbe tincture helps 81% of impotent men.
Wow.
The favorite aphrodisiac and potency enhancer in Brazil is guarana. The peeled, dried, roasted, pulverized seeds strengthen the nervous system, help prevent illness, increase desire, and improve performance. A cup of damiana leaf infusion or a teaspoon of the tincture improves her interest and his staying power.
Wow.
So there's a lot of choices here in Down There, which is for men and women.
Wow. That's amazing.
There's a lot. There's an entire section for men, right, with penis and prostate and testicles. And, you know, each of the organs, I set myself the task to write something in the voice of that organ. So the bladder said it all goes round and round, but it comes down to me. And really, I didn't have much problem at all just getting into what the voice of the organ was, even the prostate, which after all is just a uterus that never made it. Mm-hmm. Right, the bladder, the prostate, and, you know, testicles, the ovaries that are hanging loose, okay, can get there. But wow, when I got to the penis, it was like a blank. I just, like, couldn't get the voice of the penis. And I said, all right, grandmothers, you're going to have to help me out here. Send me a dream. And when I woke up in the morning, these words were in my mind. Man is a tool maker. I am his tool. Man is a thinker. I am his thought.
Oh. Huh.
And then all the rest of it came from there. As a tool, I am an extension of the hand. As a thought, I am an extension of the mind. Mm. Pound, hammer, drill, and screw. I am a tool of creation. I prefer to act first and think later. So it was a lot. It was a lot of fun. Once I got started, thank you, grandmothers.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm suggesting here is that sex is a whole lot more than a hard dick.
Mm-hmm.
And if you two aren't having sex yet, it's like, go back to being teenagers. Let the hard dick be the last thing that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not like the last thing of the evening, but like months from now, years from now, walk up to it. Want it. I think about the 70-year-old woman whose husband started taking, you know, the little blue pill and she smothered him.
She smothered him?
Mm-hmm. They said, why'd you smother? She said, he was bothering me day and night.
Oh, jeez. Oh. Are those little blue pills dangerous?
Yes.
I thought
all drugs are dangerous, right?
Yep.
It's just like, is it a drug? Yes. Is it dangerous? Yes, because it's a drug. Does that mean it doesn't work? No. Does that mean that everybody who takes it has a bad effect? No.
Mm-hmm.
But is it dangerous? Yes. How dangerous is up for the individual? In this case, it's maybe a little harder than usual to really assign a risk-benefit ratio, because any risk at all would have to outweigh it, because there is literally no real-world benefit, right? It's not like you two are desperately trying to make a baby. Am I wrong?
No, you're correct.
Therefore, there is no real life benefit for his taking the drug, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was lovers with a man who lost the ability to have erections in his mid-20s. He slowed down a little bit over the 33 years that I knew him, but at one point he was lovers with more than 24 different women.
Hmm.
And not a single one of us said, I wish you'd take a pill and make your dick hard. Because he didn't need it and we didn't need it.
I always thought he was just low on progesterone.
That's a very simple explanation. And it is a rather mechanical explanation.
Mm-hmm.
And human beings are emotional, somatic. We have ongoing stories that may not make sense to others. So again, what I say is I want you to have sex if you're unsure about that. Montauk Chia, C-H-I-A, has an excellent book called Cultivating Female Sexuality. It's for both of you. It's for both of you. At this point in a man's life, what he is designed to do is to pleasure you. Because as we've noticed, your desire and your ability has not gone away. Hello. We were at Moon Lodge the other night, and after Moon Lodge, we were kind of hanging out. There was a young woman there, and the subject of orgasms came up. And there were some older women, and we were saying, you know, the clitoris never ages, and it just gets better and better and better the older you are, and especially once you don't have to worry about being pregnant anymore. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about you. It's, in a way, it's totally about you. And his taking a pill to get hard is a pretense that it's about him again.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. So Cultivating Female Sexuality, Montauk Chia. And pretend you're 15. And you've never done it. You've never even kissed a boy before. Treat each other like that for a while.
What does Montauk Chia mean? What is that, a different language?
I do not know where he's from, but it's a name.
Oh.
M-A-N-T-A-U-K. Montauk Chia. C-H-I-A.
Oh, is that the author of the book?
That is the author of the book.
Oh, okay.
M-A-N-T-A-U-K. Montauk Chia. C-H-I-A. He's written a great number of books, but the one that I would like you to look into is Cultivating Female Sexuality. And both of you, because this is now what you do. This is now, if a man's going to be involved, this is his place now, is to bring you pleasure. And there may be a point at which you say, it will bring me a lot of pleasure if you take that pill. If you want that, it's within your right to ask. But it's not something he's going to foist on you.
Well, I've been hinting for years that he needs to do something because...
Well, the something is not take a pill. The something is to desire you. The something is to treat you like something he wants.
Exactly.
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 Being hard isn't it. It may be the symbol of it, but you're not going to be fooled.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to wind up with a pillow over his face in the middle of the night. It's not going to end well. You want his actual desire. You don't want his.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not a touchy-feely person, and I didn't meet him until he was 54.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew each other just as friends for 5 years. And then, I had had a previous marriage, and my husband at that time wanted it all the time. I mean, he couldn't get enough. And my first husband taught me everything I knew. I knew nothing. You talk about being 15 again. I wasn't until a sophomore in college when I finally got to experience it with my first husband, and he taught me everything I knew. And then all these years, I just think he was always that way. I was a cuddler with my first husband, and we cuddled all the time, and it was always, you know, foreplay. And this guy, I love him to pieces. You know, he's sweet. He's a great ballroom dancer and all that, but I've been all these years trying to tell him I love cuddling with you. You know, I love cuddling. I would love love more touching. I would love more this. I would love more that, but he doesn't seem to have the interest. That's why I'm deciding, I wonder if there's some herbs out there that will make him have the interest.
That would make him be a different person. No, I think he's the person he is. I hear that the person he is isn't exactly what you want. So you have to decide. It's a tough decision. You have to decide if you want him or if you want what you want. But you can't have both.
Yeah, I hear you. I definitely want him, so I'll have to please myself.
Exactly. And, you know, if he wants to join in while you're pleasing yourself, all the better. And if he doesn't, okay. But keep it going. It's good for you. It's healthy. Orgasms are important. And take a look, you know. What really brings you pleasure? Get more of it in your life.
Yes, I've been doing that lately.
Good for you.
Doing more things that I enjoy, like back to singing in the choir, you know, more singing, more dancing, because I've had serious scoliosis, severe scoliosis, and lots of pain. For many, many years, and I'm finally getting a little bit of relief. So I'm, after being isolated and not doing things that I loved and all my volunteer work and stuff, and back to work to make some money too. So, you know, we're not struggling. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying. But I also, with my first husband, I enjoyed it tremendously, the sex and frequent intercourse, but then I started getting dry, and then it was not fun anymore. And is there a favorite lubricant that you can recommend? Because it really was no longer fun anymore because I was so dry. I think I remember trying coconut oil. I didn't know. That didn't really seem to help.
There are a lot of women in that position, and drugstores have whole shelves of things. So what I suggest is, you know, you can, you know, go through coconut oil, olive oil, tallow, you know, hypericum oils with herbs in them, hypericum oil, till you find something. Cleaver's oil is especially nice. My breast book has a whole section on herbal oils.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I didn't want to go to the drugstore. I didn't trust any of those man-made things. You know, I wanted to stay au naturel. So
it's a good time of year to start looking for cleavers. It's well up in most places. As a matter of fact, Sarah Ellen is in Florida, it might even be starting to flower and time to start making things with it.
Is your cleavers up yet, Susan?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. Oh. I was out harvesting chickweed, which is in full flower, and I was having to move the cleavers away. And it was still very young. As a matter of fact, as I was moving it away, I was eating the tender little tips of it. So it's that young and tender still. But in another few weeks, it will be harvestable.
Wow. And how do I make oil? Is that in your book, how to make hypericum? Well, I know how to make hypericum oil, but I've never made
cleaver oil. I didn't know that was
same thing. Harvest the cleavers, cut it up fine, put it in a jar, pour olive oil over it, or get coconut oil warm enough to pour and pour the coconut oil over it. Put the coconut oil, leave it in the sun. The olive oil, you don't need to.
Oh, and how long? I can't remember when I made the hypericum oil, how long I let it set. What, maybe it was 6 weeks? I can't remember. I made it so long ago, and I made a whole bunch of it.
I usually strain the plant material out of the coconut oil after 6 to 8 weeks.
Oh, 6 to 8 weeks.
Right, and I'm often doing it in the summertime so that it's outside in the sun. And then one day when it's really warm and liquid, I just strain it into another container.
Okay.
And often I will keep the oily plant material to use as a bath scrub.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. It's good to put it in like a muslin bag so it doesn't clog your drain.
Yes, yes.
But they're very, you know, it's a good way to use up those last bits of oil.
Wow. And if I used olive oil, would I just do the same thing that I do with the hypericum?
Yes, exactly the same thing.
And do you strain that after 6 to 8 weeks too?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Wow, I've got lots of ideas. I can't wait to get back to you. Thank you so much, Susan.
You are welcome. Dream blessings. Good night.
Oh, green blessings to you and to Sarah Ellen. It's so fun hearing about your new adventure, Sarah Ellen.
Thank you, Rose.
Looking forward to hearing more. Thanks again, both of you. Green blessings to both of you.
Green blessings. Good night.
Good night.
All right. And we do have four callers that have raised their hands and have pressed one in the 818. I'm opening your line in the 818. You are live with Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
I started my first herbal medicine garden last summer. I bought a few transplants, and I have no experience with how to harvest these herbs that I have. I have comfrey, echinacea, yarrow, self-heal, feverfew, and calendula. The question I have is with feverfew, because there's not much information out there on how to harvest, or because some say leaves are okay, and I've also read that leaves and flowers, and I'm not sure if the fresh leaves are good for tincturing or dried, or so wanted to just get your based experience on what to do with feverfew.
In general, in every instance when we're working with plants, the fresh plant material is going to yield a tincture that has more constituents, that has a greater medicinal value. Because as it dries, we will lose volatile constituents. So I always prefer to make tinctures with fresh plants. The question, however, is not for me so much should it be fresh or dried feverfew, but what is your intended use for the feverfew?
Honestly, at the time when I bought it, I didn't know much about it. I've read some of your articles that you have recommended it for migraine, but more of a preventive, like eating a leaf every day. So not really for, you know.
Exactly. The primary use of feverfew is as a preventative helper for people who generally have migraine headaches. And it is generally considered to be most effective when small amounts of it are eaten on a regular or daily basis. And that's why there's no particular instructions about how to preserve it, because most people don't. Feverfew is in the Asteraceae family, which is an enormous family. And everything in the Asteraceae family is technically, all right, edible, but some of them are so strong in volatile oils that they cause massive upset to our stomach. Think wormwood. Think tansy. Think feverfew. Think senecios. So this is the other reason why we generally don't make feverfew tinctures, because they're not uses for them that I know that are safe and popular, shall I say. It is, however, a beautiful plant, and it's okay to just have a plant in your garden that's a beautiful plant and that you have a nibble of sometime. It's an insect repellent. It will help repel insects from your other plants, and for that, hurrah. And should you be bothered and cut a switch of it and switch yourself with it, do you smell like a feverfew plant? The insects will probably leave you alone, too, just like with the catnip, which is in a different family. So the fact that we can't make a remedy from it doesn't mean it isn't a remedy.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
For the echinacea, I know the roots are used, but can I use the flowers, make tinctures of just the flowers?
People make tinctures of all parts of echinacea, the seeds, the flowers, the leaves, and the roots. Generally, herbalists use roots when the plant has particular alkaloids, which are more concentrated in roots, especially older roots. So the ginseng root is valued more than ginseng leaf. Echinacea root is valued more than echinacea leaf. Leaves generally have nutritive qualities because they actually act as forage for herbivores. Flowers, however, are what? What is the flower? The flower is the sexual organs of the plant, right? The flower is reproductive. Flowers are pretty to attract pollinators. So I always say that the safest part of a plant to eat is a flower, because that's where the least the medicine will ever be. Especially if you're a poisonous plant, right? Because you do not get real far in life if you poison your pollinators. Right? In general, perennial roots accumulate alkaloids and other medicinal qualities as they grow. When I first started studying herbal medicine, it was understood that you didn't even bother to look at a ginseng root unless it was at least 10 years old. 15 years later, it was pretty common practice to sell ginseng roots that were 7 years old. Nobody saw a problem with that. By the late 1900s, early 20s, Most ginseng roots were, well, at least 5 years old, and nowadays a 3-year-old root is considered normal. It's been said that in China, 100-year-old ginseng roots are worth more than their weight in gold. The roots accumulate things. Flowers are here and gone. That doesn't mean you wouldn't have a good enough remedy or a different remedy. Valerian root is almost always used. It seems rather crude to me. And it leaves a lot of people just really feeling messed up, even if it does work to get them to sleep. So I was sitting with the valerian. It was in flower, and the butterflies were all over it. And the valerian said, you know, my flowers will work too. So I made tincture of valerian flower, and sure enough, it puts most people to sleep, and they don't feel bad the next day. Would I, if I had an infection, take a tincture of echinacea flower? Mm-mm. But then again, if I were sick, I probably wouldn't take a tincture of echinacea purpurea root, even if it was from the fresh 10-year-old root anyhow. I really thought, my experiences with echinacea augustifolia, which is harder to grow, and it's such a powerful, effective anti-infective agent. And like most human beings, once I get something that really works and that works consistently for me, I don't like to give it up or change. And in talking to people who've used both, most people who've used both agree that the purpurea is good enough for things like colds, but doesn't have the force of the augustifolia in a really bad infection situation. And the flower then would be, you know, even like lighter, like, okay, I'm going to use this flower tincture to wash wounds to prevent infection. That'd be great use for it. Okay. But it wouldn't be the tincture you'd reach for if your jaw was, like, throbbing with pain, right?
Right.
Right.
Can you recommend some... I like to expand my garden. Can you recommend some other ones that I could get this year?
I am particularly fond of my Schisandra vine. It does need some place to crawl up, but it will repay you with delightfully fragrant flowers and lots of highly medicinal berries, the five-flavor berry. And I am a big devotee of Schisandra. It's a little expensive to get started with a root. Be sure you get a variety that's self-fertile. In the wild, there are female plants and male plants, but most of the sold varieties are what's called self-fertile. In other words, they have male and female flowers on the same plant, so you actually do get berries.
Okay.
I enjoy very much having thyme in my garden. All of the mints have unique personalities and all of the kind of, shall we say, family abilities. All of the mints relieve anxiety. All of the mints relieve menstrual cramps. All of the mints help ease digestive woes and relieve gas pain. All of the mints improve breathing. And thyme is just a garden plant that I really love. Now, that could be because I garden in a stony, rocky place. At times, loves to grow in stony, rocky places, and so it does well. And there's so many different types of thyme. So I have lemon thyme and lavender thyme and English thyme and creeping thyme and woolly thyme, and French thyme and English thyme. And creeping thyme. And a great thyme, right?
That's awesome.
I always find a place for thyme. I, again, don't know how much space you have, but if you have a dampish corner, and it should be not in the bright, bright sun, all right, I would grow some Monarda.
Monarda?
My preference is Monarda didyma, also known as bee balm.
Oh, yeah.
It's a mint. It's a big mint. It will often flower, shoulder height. And the Monarda didyma, the red bee balm, has a pure, beautiful red flower. And, goodness, and is the only Monarda that is filled with oregano oil. The other Monardas, especially the ones of cultivation, and you need to smell them, can hardly be used because anything you put them in immediately tastes like pizza. Whereas the Monarda didyma has a really nice, pleasant, and one might even go so far as to say subtle mint flavor. And again, depending on where you live and how long you intend to live there, planting a hawthorn tree is always a wonderful thing to do. It will take years before it's bearing, before it gives you anything other than a great feeling of satisfaction to see your hawthorn growing. Albeit slowly, but growing, growing, nonetheless, growing. And to know that not just you, but those who come to this place after you will have that wonderful haws and the great medicine of the hawthorn. When I planted my herb crescent, I threw down 30 years worth of seeds that I had been saving, which included seeds that I had bought and seeds that I had just put in my pocket from walks, and I just scattered them all, some of them 30 years old, some of them just a couple of years old, into my herb crescent, stomped on them and threw a little compost on them. And virtually every mallow seed, no matter how old, grew.
Wow.
So if you really want a great plant that will definitely grow for you, no matter where you are, desert, all right, forest, high, low, the Malvaceae will definitely give you something from hollyhock to marshmallow, the shirt, one that will win your heart. And then the last plant that I would encourage everyone to have in their garden is some form of amaranth. Now, that might just be letting the weedy amaranth grow, just enjoying the amaranth that already grows in your garden. Or that might be buying a fancy amaranth. I think the fanciest amaranth I ever saw was about, oh, gosh, I don't know, it was well over my head. So I'm going to say 7 feet, maybe even 8 feet tall. And the flowers, which in the amaranth are in clusters, were hanging from the plant, drooping down in clusters, oh golly gee, maybe 6 inches long, and this bright magenta red color. And I was introduced to this plant. This plant was called Love Lies Bleeding. I don't know if it actually goes by that name in any seed catalog, but you get any seed catalog that sells a bunch of amaranths, you'll be wowed and charmed what this weed can do, how fancy it can get. And again, it's guaranteed to grow, and usually it will spread itself. It's an annual, but you grow it once, have it forevermore, often. Okay. And for those who want to know more or who want to talk more specifically, on May 19th, I'm doing a class called Your Herbal Garden Hands On, and we will look at my favorite plants to either leave or plant in your herb garden, including doing hands-on work, wild tending, harvesting, and so on. That's right here at the Wise Woman Center.
Sounds nice. It's not online, right? I live in California, so I won't be able to.
Oh, mere plane right away.
Thank you, Susan. Thanks for your help.
You're welcome. Green blessings. Good night.
Thank you.
All right, we've got about 2.5 minutes. Would you like a call or to go to?
Is Anadea with us?
She is, yes.
She is. Okay, well, let me find my device so that I can introduce her. Very good, Susan. Excellent job of hiding it on yourself, all right? It's, of course, when I call, it's daylight. And then by 9 o'clock, it's dark. So all the things I put down in the daylight, I can no longer see because I tend not to turn on lights until I actually need them. All right, and then we have Anadea Judith, PhD, a globally recognized teacher and the author of several best-selling books on chakras, psychology, yoga, social change, and women's leadership. She has been translated into 28 languages. You rock, girl. Her latest book is Goddess, Blessed Reunions with the Feminine Face of the Divine. Anadea holds a master's degree in clinical psychology and a doctorate in mind-body health with advanced yoga certifications and other somatic therapy training. As a globally recognized teacher, her workshops have reached at least 163 countries with a live and online presence. She's the founder and director of the teaching organization Sacred Centers, a member of the Evolutionary Leadership Council, and has been called a prophet for our times. We're very honored to have you with us tonight, Anadea.
Thank you, Susan. I'm so delighted to be here, and we have met in years past, but it's been quite some time.
I was just thinking back to how long it has been, and certainly more than 30 years.
Really? Wow. Wow. We were both very different women back then.
Indeed, indeed. And yet some things remain the same, which is our commitment to the what you're calling the feminine face of the divine.
Yes, indeed. And commitment to our work and to bringing it into the world.
So I call that feminine face the goddess. And
yes, I
and you call her the goddess too. In fact, you know, in this time of inclusionary language, I say to people, I want you to listen to my words because I'm going to be using inclusionary language. She includes he. Her includes he. Woman includes man. And goddess includes God. These are the words I will be using inclusively at all times.
I'm in agreement with that. Perfectly in agreement, because I think sometimes men think anything about the goddess is just for women, and it's hardly the case. The goddess includes everything, and that includes men as well.
It includes God. It's right there, G-O-D, God. It starts the word.
That's right. Yes, indeed.
Right. Indeed. And so a new book. How exciting. Tell us about what excited you about the book and what's got you going about it?
Well, I think the goddess asked me to write this book. I had started a book on the goddess 40 years ago after I was ordained as a priestess in 1985. And I wrote a few chapters and then life took me in a different direction and I put it away on a shelf. And I was cleaning my office one day and I came across it and I went, I wonder if you're ever going to do anything with this. And I kind of folded it up and put it away. And I thought, well, goddess, if you want me to write this book, you should tell me. And 2 weeks later, I kid you not, I was in a Zoom breakout session on one of my evolutionary leader calls with Ariel Patricia, the publisher of Common Sentience. And she said, Anadeya, I've been wanting to contact you. I want you to write a book about the goddess. Are you interested? And so it had come out, not even looking for it, it came to me. So, of course, having served the goddess all my life, how could I say no?
How could you possibly say no?
And not only that, it is
And what's your favorite part of the book?
Well, the thing I think that is really important for people to realize is that the goddess was once, you know, the great mother that was worshipped by humanity in humanity's infancy. And there was a time of peace and prosperity, and she's the living things, and she's the plants and the animals and the herbs, of course. And she is the life force within everything, and she was deeply honored. And when, you know, what we now call patriarchy took over and began to supplant the goddess and really plow her underground, she was so stricken from the collective consciousness through, I mean, I could go into the history, and I do go into the history quite a bit in the book, and if you want me to, I'm happy to, but just to tell the short story, she was so severely taken from the culture that I grew up not even knowing that a goddess ever existed. It never occurred to me, and it wasn't until I read Edith Hamilton's mythology in the ninth grade that I ever knew there was once gods and goddesses and that there was anything other than the Christian male monotheism that I had grown up to accept. And so I think people need to realize what we lost when we lost the goddess and that we are not playing with a full deck here in the world, and it's time that we came to a partnership model that is playing with a full deck.
Resource extraction is coming to an end.
Yes, we hope so.
Nourishment and replenishment are coming to the front.
Yes, let us hope so. And I know your work with herbs is all about that. It's all about the healing power of the plants and you know, bringing better constitution to the body and the soul and healing that way. And I think that there were so many ways of healing that we lost. We have the war mentality of, you know, taking pharmaceuticals to kill things. And there are other ways. And it's not that, you know, that what the masculine world has brought us isn't valuable. Sometimes I say men have a thing and women have a place, and men have given us a marvelous world full of marvelous things, but in the process they have trashed the place. And right now we don't need more things. We need to clean up the place. We need to clean up the planet and let Mother Gaia do what she's done for billions of years.
Take care of it. Yes, I don't see it, you know, as like maybe masculine and feminine ways of healing, but more like the scientific view, which wants to measure and fix, and the heroic view, which likes to balance and cleanse, and then the wise woman view, which is about nourishing wholeness.
Yes, yes. And when you nourish wholeness, you know, Marianne Woodman once said, wholeness is a power all of its own. And when you find your way to wholeness, that opens doors and that makes things possible. And that's really what I think everyone is seeking. They're seeking their wholeness.
And the goddess has a lot to do with that.
She does indeed, because, you know, like I say, she is half of the creative power in the universe. If we deny that, we aren't playing with wholeness. I say a religion without a goddess is halfway to atheism. And so the goddess representing the life force, joy, creativity, celebration, the sacred, honoring the connection of all things. This is something that we have lost, and we've gone into, you know, religions that are just black and white and, you know, strict and punishing, and we've lost much of the joy and the connection with the sacred, which I think is so important for us to deeply honor our world and the magic that that world carries.
Yes, I was struck by two news stories. The horrible one, that in the few years since the Taliban has taken over in Afghanistan, gender apartheid has been put into effect to the point where women and girls basically do not exist. They have no legal status. They can't own anything, drive, teach. Every 2 hours, an Afghani woman dies in childbirth. It's just hideous and crushes my heart that other women on this planet who just a few years ago were free to walk down the street can't now. And at the same time, 1,000 women over 70 sued the government of Switzerland for not doing more about climate change and won.
Yes, yes. And, you know, in Iceland, it was the women going on strike that turned it over when they had corrupt politicians and they threw them all out. And the women even refused to do childcare that day, you know, and the men finally got the message, they had to listen. But really, this is not about dominance of women. It's really about coming to a partnership model where the contribution that the feminine brings, which is beauty, which is peace, which is collaboration, which is, you know, compassion, the what we, you know, often denigrate as some of the softer things. We need that softness in the world right now. And that's missing from the public conversation and is needed to be there. And so I think those are the attributes of the goddess that need to be celebrated and brought back into the elements that we're creating the future with.
I find myself more and more when asked, what's the active ingredient in an herb, kind of smiling and saying, I'm far more fascinated by the passive ingredients.
Oh, how wonderful. Yes, yes. Yes, and why is that? If I interview you for a moment, that you're more fascinated by the passive ingredients.
Because they are team players.
Yes, and I think, you know, we know that when women are part of peace negotiation and that the peace is held longer by the people, it's more accepted by the people, and yet very few women are allowed in the peace negotiations. Only one woman in the whole world has signed an international peace treaty. But women are better at getting the parts to collaborate and seeing both sides and getting them to talk to each other. And so that's what's needed to create peace.
Yes. Yes. It's one of the most important aspects of nourishment. The wise woman tradition is about nourishing wholeness. And speaking and being heard are one of the three most important parts of nourishment. Certainly nourishment is what we eat and drink. But to be heard and to actually speak, these are incredibly important aspects of nourishment, and to engage in simple ceremony.
Yes, that simple ceremony.
How does the goddess make the ceremony?
Yeah, the simple ceremony puts us in touch with the sacred. It can make everyday moments sacred if we just pause and say, let's light a candle for a moment here and honor what is in this moment between us and bring that into the sacred. That itself is also nourishing. And as you know, I've taught all over the world, and I find as I teach in many different cultures and continents that the problems people have are largely the same. But what I find universally is a hunger for the sacred. There is so much of the profane. And even if I just take a moment in the workshop to do an invocation, to do a prayer, to, you know, just take a moment, or even the way I can look into the eyes of someone asking me a question and regard them as a sacred being, it is something that people hunger for and just lap up, and it's nourishing. It's nourishing and it's strengthening because we have moved away from the sacred.
What a wonderful psychic wave we're riding, because I was just about to ask you if you would lead us in a meditation or an invocation or a prayer, whatever is in your heart right now to share with us.
Oh, well, you know, I do talk in the book about invocation. And invocation starts with the word in, so you're calling something in. And an invocation is like a prayer to whatever you want to call in, a prayer to the goddess, a prayer to God. It could be a prayer to a fairy, to an angel, to an ancestor. I mean, it doesn't matter, but you're calling it in. So since I am talking to the wise woman of herbalism, I will call in Gaia. And I will say, let's take a deep breath and ground ourselves down into the Holy Mother Earth. Ground ourselves into home. In fact, I like to often start my workshops with a chanting, not of the word Om, but the word home, because home stands for Holy Order of Mother Earth. And there is a holy order in the biology of the mother, that the way she has created everything that has full recycling, full employment in all her natural ecosystem. So we ground our feet down into this Holy Mother, and we give thanks for all the nourishment that she brings to us day in and day out, the food we eat, the herbs we take, the tea we drink, the green leaves that nourish our sight, the beautiful flowers, the oxygen that is given off by the plants that we breathe in. And we give thanks and we call to this Mother to show us how to come back to her ways, to show us how to live in harmony with the planet so that we can be sustainable and thrive into the future, to bring heaven down to earth and honor our Mother who gives us life. And in this calling in, we breathe her in. We breathe her into our crown chakra, and we breathe her in that the knowledge of her ways comes to us. And as we breathe out, we breathe that knowledge out into the world. And we breathe in to our sixth chakra, the realm of vision. We breathe in her beauty, the beauty of the forest, the beauty of the land, the mountains, the sea, the oceans, the rivers. And we breathe her beauty out into the world that she may be seen and recognized. And we breathe her words into our throat chakra, that we may hear the whisper of her wisdom. And as we breathe her back out, we breathe her words into the world, that she may be heard once again. And we come down to the heart chakra, and we breathe her love into us and nourish ourselves on the love of the Mother, how good she is to her children despite how we have treated her, and how she gives and gives. And as we breathe out, we vow to give back We vow to protect her. We vow to sustain her. We vow to bow to her and learn her ways. And we bring her into the third chakra, or her power, and we breathe her power back out into the world, the power to give life, the power of the cycle of life, birth, death, the whole cycle that continues and continues. We breathe in the pleasure of the goddess that is moving through us in our embodiment, and we breathe her into every cell of the body, that we become her and know that each of us is an incarnation of the divine in one of her holy expressions.
Mm.
And there we are.
Woo-hoo! Wow. Oh. Thank you. Thank you. Gratitude. Let's give that a moment to sink into us, like the gentle rain on the garden that's just had compost put on it.
Ah, yes, I love going out into my garden after a rain. I can just feel the nourishment of that, and all the plants are so happy, and they're just soaking it up. This winter in California, we had good rains after many years of drought, and the plants are so grateful, and they're so
So the book that you wrote, The Goddess, is part of a series of books. You mentioned Common Sentience, which has a mystical book series. Is there anything about this series we should know, not just your book, but the whole series?
Yeah. So a woman named Ariel Patricia from Sacred Stories Publishing, and this is her dream to bring these mystical paths back to the public and have really quite grounded people writing about them. It's not just, you know, airy-fairy New Age. I was just at an event this weekend with a lot of the authors, and, you know, some of the topics I'm a little can be suspicious of, but when I heard them speak, they spoke from a very grounded way. And she has a pattern for each book that is similar in that the first part of the book, written by the lead author, and I'm the lead author on the Goddess book, is the theory of that practice, whether it's shamanism or animal communication or sound healing or the goddess. And then the middle section is written by many different people, each of them telling their personal stories of, in my case, encounters with the goddess. And the lead author of the book writes the first story and the last story in that section. And then there's about 25 to 30 stories from different people. And it brings it down to earth. It brings it like, this is not just theory here. This is where someone actually had an encounter, where something happened, something tangible. And then the third part of the book, which is written, again, by the lead author, is the practices. So we have theory, we have people's real experience, and then the practices of how to get there. And,
Wow. That's great. So in the Goddess book, you have your experiences with the Goddess, other women's experiences with the Goddess, both?
Yes. And stories that make it real. Yeah. I mean, I could tell one of my stories if you like.
I would like very much. I like stories a lot.
Oh, good. Yeah. Stories, the universe is made of stories, not atoms. Well, this was a long time ago when I was a poor starving artist painting large-scale murals for a living and not making much money at it, I'll say. So I didn't have a car. I had only a bicycle, and I would carry my paint cans on the handlebars of my bicycle. And when it was raining, I would either take a bus or hitchhike home. And I was working, painting the inside of a large movie theater on a job, and the person who had hired me was into the guru, Muktananda. It had a big picture of him at the end of the hall. And one night when it was raining, I was about to go home. He said, "Why don't you pray to the guru to give you a good ride?" And I thought, sure, I'm open to anything. You know, I was more into goddesses, but I thought I'll try it. So I said a little prayer, and I walked out, and I just missed the bus, and it splashed water all over me, and I stuck out my thumb, knowing it would be 20 minutes, and car after car after car passed me, and nobody picked me up. So I thought, well, enough of that. I should have asked the goddess. That's who I have a personal relationship with. So I did a quick little prayer to the goddess, and I said, I'm sorry I didn't come to you first, but I really need a ride home. And no sooner had I done that than a silver BMW pulled up with a very beautiful woman inside. She rolled down the window and said, would you like a ride, honey? And I said, sure would, because I'm soaking
sure
wet by that. I got in. My favorite jazz station was playing on the radio. It was nice and warm. And she asked where I was going, and she said, whenever it's raining, I make a point to pick up women. It's how I pay my tribute to the goddess. And with that, she drove me all the way home.
Wow. Amazing.
And I didn't ask her to say that. It was like the goddess herself, you know, swooped down and gave me a ride.
She did. Absolutely. We all live charmed lives. Most of us just aren't watching out for the charms.
That's right. That's right. And they're here all the time. You know, the universe is alive and intelligent.
And
it's aware. It's conscious.
It doesn't necessarily do what you want any more than a child or a pet. But it's responsive nonetheless.
It is responsive. It is responsive. We are dealing with a mass intelligence that we are still a little bit too small to understand.
During the time that I spent studying with Jean Houston, one evening she told the group of us, there were about 125 in this particular two-week live-in course, that she wanted us to watch a movie about Gaia and the Gaia hypothesis. Mm-hmm. And I went to her and I said, Jean, like, I know the people, I know the Gaia hypothesis, like, give me a break, I don't have to watch the movie. She says, go watch the movie. I'm like, nah. So I went and watched the movie, and I totally agree. The Earth is a living presence and can achieve homeostasis and health all on her own. She's okay. She's just fine. But what really got to me, and it comes up because of what you were just saying, is they talked about something I hadn't heard about, which is thresholds. And that if you take 10 billion atoms and you confine them in a space-time, that they will spontaneously join together to form molecules.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You don't eliminate atoms. Atoms still go on. The atoms still have existence. But we now have a more complicated structure, which is two atoms or more together to make molecules.
That's right.
The same threshold exists for molecules joining together to make simple cells. You need 10 billion molecules in a confined space-time, and then you get simple cell organisms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And again, there's still molecules. We got water. We got H2O. It's a molecule.
That's right.
Right? Molecules are still here. Atoms are still here. But now we have single-cell organisms. And, wow, the same threshold for single-cell organisms becoming multicellular organisms. You have to have 10 billion of them in a confined space-time. This is where they stopped. But, of course, your mind and my mind have taken it on to the next step, that when you have 10 billion humans in a confined space-time called planet Earth, we will, in fact, create something about as comprehensible to us now as a fully functioning liver is to a paramecium.
Ah, yes, yes. Yes, I believe that. And, you know, what's interesting about that is the single-celled organisms were on this planet for about 3 billion years before they figured out how to put themselves together in the first multi-celled creatures. And after that, it was only another 800 million years before we had the mammals and then eventually the humans who could, you know, walk down the street and text on cell phones. But, you know, it took a while for those individual cells to learn how to put themselves together and cooperate. And I feel we're at the same place. We have, individuals and in the world, individualism is just heightened, and individual cities and countries and towns and religions and everything is in its silo. And we're trying to figure out how to put ourselves together and work together. But I think in order to work together, we as humans are capable of having a vision of what are we working together for. And what I have always been about in my life is that, you know, I think, why did Gaia make humans? And what are we here to do on the planet at this time? And the answer that I come up with is create heaven on earth. Because really, that's what we're given. And can we create with the divine? And, you know, art is beautiful, and art follows nature, and nature follows art. You know, they work together, that we are here to create heaven on earth.
Every act of beauty and pleasure is in her honor.
That's right. That's right. There was a saying back in my goddess days, you know, all acts of love and pleasure are her rituals.
It's as simple as that. If you're not making beauty or making love, then you're not worshiping the goddess.
That's right. That's right.
Although I say to people, you know, we never worship the goddess, not in the way that you think of as worship.
We are
the goddess. We embody her.
Exactly.
We speak her. We feel her. We flow with her. It's a more animistic kind of religious experience, spiritual experience.
Yes, to worship something says that it's other than you. You're worshiping something outside yourself. The goddess is within everything. And so the more we become her, the more alive she becomes within us. And it is dancing. It's more like dancing her than worshiping her. And in that, she is served.
Mm. Mm. Oh, how beautiful. You're dancing her. I love that. I was having
and
a tiny
squabble
with somebody.
Beauty is one of the unsung spiritual values, that when we are in the presence of beauty, and I'm not talking about stereotypical model beauty, I'm talking about the beauty of a forest, a mountain, the sea, we are in the presence of the divine.
Yes. Nature itself, herself, is what rises that divinity up within us.
Yes,
and especially,
exactly.
Especially time alone in nature, where I always say if you give Mother Nature even a single hour of your time, she will do her best to convince you that you are her favorite child.
Aha, that's beautiful. Yes, yes. To me, being in nature is the same kind of reset that you get from meditation. And meditation is such a big thing, and I meditate myself. I'm not against it. But for me, taking a walk by myself in nature is that same kind of reset, if not more so.
Mm-hmm.
Or being out in my garden.
It is definitely more so, because we know from Japanese forest bathing that the minute amounts of volatiles in the air when you're walking in nature have very profound effects on you, just as the minute amounts of chemicals outgassing from things indoors can have effects on you.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, yeah. And the negative ions.
Yeah, negative ions. You know, please excuse me, I have been lax in asking you to tell all of our listeners how they can get in touch with you, and our time is just down to our last few minutes, and they're very severe on these shows. They really cut us off. So please tell us how to get in touch with you and to find your books.
Well, you can always find me and all my books and teachings on AnnodeaJudith.com, A-N-O-D-E-A, Judith is my last name, J-U-D-I-T-H.com. And also SheRisesMovement.com, which is another project, but that also includes the goddess and archetype cards and awakening superpowers in women. So SheRisesMovement.com. You can find the book Goddess on Amazon, and you can also find it on my website.
Oh, cards. Oh, yes, we're going to have to, behind the scenes here, arrange a book exchange. Yum, yum.
Oh,
so,
I love that.
Yes.
I'll follow
All
up
right.
and get your address and send you something.
I'd love it. Ditto. And what would you like to leave in the hearts and the minds of everyone who's listening to you tonight, Anadea?
I would like to leave the idea that magic is possible when we tune into the magic that is there in the mystery of creation, and that we can nourish ourselves on the breast of the goddess, no matter how old we are, just by going out and listening to the plants and the animals and the wind and taking that in. It nourishes the soul. It brings us back to the sacred, and it can restore our world.
Oh, thank you so much. I believe that we are engaged in reweaving the healing cloak of the ancients. I want to thank you for all of the decades of work that you have done on this reweaving, starting with, as I did, imaginary threads, threads that we had to imagine into being in this great cloak. We knew it existed, and we knew that we could recreate it. And look at it now. Oh, my gosh. Shimmering and shining and still more to add to it. Thank you, Anadea Judith, for all that you do for all of us. And Sarah Ellen, 1 week to the Red Clover Conference. This is it, everybody. Get your short in now or sign up. It's still, wow, almost half price. And once the conference starts, bingo, full price, Red Clover Conference. Herbal medicine is people's medicine. Dream blessings and good night, everybody.
Thank you, Susan. Great to speak with a wise woman.
And to speak with you, Anadea.
Yes, it really is truly a joy. I feel your wisdom in every word. Thank you.
Thank you.